Pleasure to be here, and I welcome you early in the morning. When I was thinking about this panel, I thought that really my role is to really provide you with a framework for thinking about policy before answering the question, is policy failing adolescents? And I will do that. And as I struggled with this talk and issues around adolescents and adolescent health policy, I thought of the NPR interview in the business section one morning many months ago. And they were talking to people about the fact that, what do you say when you're frustrated with your job? Or frustrated with yourself about not being able to do your work? And you say, I ought to solve this. It's not nuclear science. So they went and talked to the nuclear scientists to say, what do you say when you're frustrated? And you say, I ought to know how to do this. And they say, thank goodness, or it's not brain surgery. I should be able to solve this. It's not brain surgery. So they went to talk to the brain surgeons to find out about, what do you say when you're stymied and you said you should be able to solve this? And they say, thank goodness I'm not solving major health and social problems. So the issue of adolescence, and I apologize about this, is not your bad eyesight for some baby boomers, but it just didn't work out very well. But I find that this column epitomizes, this and the next one, epitomizes our feelings about adolescence. And I think if we don't deal with the perceptions of how adolescents are not valued or valued in our society, we won't get to that policy discussion. So, and this one is, the older I get, the smarter I get. Yet the older you get, the more clueless you become. Sigh. Life is full of amusing little cruelties. And the parents say, if they ever find a cure for adolescence, I'm buying stock in that market. Or in that company, followed by DRAD, that carburetor on this dilapidated snowblower is acting up and I can't find the repair manual. And the son, the adolescent son says, no problem, Dad. All you have to do is to go to the dilapidated snowblower carburetor repair manual.com and print out the new one, see? And the father says, I got to learn to use the internet. So those two really are a nice way of looking at the way we think about adolescence. So why focus on adolescents and young adults? First, from a demographic perspective, we know that the numbers of adolescents are growing and are projected to increase from about 35 million to 42 million between the years 1990 and 2020. They represent about 13% of the population. But what's particularly important for us to recognize is the diversity of this growing population and the tremendous challenges that our country will have in looking at issues of immigration and migration and the recent fiasco in Washington around the DREAM Act and the lack of support for immigrant youth to be able to get college education speaks to the kind of controversy that we have in our field and in the country around what to do around the diversity and the multiple changes that are going on in this population. We know that there are a number of social and economic indicators that really point to the importance of this population. And in the slide here and the data, for me, what's important here is the trend data, so that there are more adolescents living just with one parent as compared to the early 70s. There are more adolescents living in poverty. And we know that these issues of single parenthood poverty are very interwoven, and they deeply impact the chances and the opportunities that young people have in our society, thus the importance of having policy to shape the opportunities that they have. We also know that adolescents in terms of health insurance remain very much an underserved population. About 15% continue to lack health insurance, and as many of you know, without health insurance, there's far poorer quality of care, no usual sorts of care, lower continuity, and more challenges in accessing care. And unfortunately, over the last few years, there really hasn't been a major change as a result of the Medicaid and SCHIP. So an issue that I'm very concerned about is how to frame adolescence and our attitude, societal attitude, and policy attitude around fixing these broken kids. And at the same time, the data and the evidence point out that, in fact, many adolescents are actually quite healthy, and they're not all running crazy with multiple risk-taking behaviors. In fact, most adolescents are only engaging in one to two risk behaviors. clearly we have to focus on those adolescents and think about prevention. But I also think partly it's the framing that has created many of the policy challenges. At the same time, we need to think about why invest in adolescent health. And clearly, both from a life course perspective and from the kinds of expenses that are associated with many of these adolescent health problems, whether they be in the area of alcohol and drug use, whether they be in mental health areas, substance abuse, sexually transmitted infections, motor vehicle, and adolescent pregnancy, that contributes to over a $700 billion estimate. So what have we learned in the field of adolescent health? Very briefly, we have recognized it as a distinct age group with life course implications. And while they tend to be a healthy group, many of the behaviors are oriented and impacted by psychosocial factors. And we clearly, as public health champions, are committed to earlier interventions. In particular, we see some promising trends in the area of tobacco and sexual behavior. We're moving very strongly to try to shift our definitions of teenagers as problems and having deficits to really thinking about them from a youth development perspective and the promotion of healthy development throughout adolescence and young adulthood. We're working towards moving away from just a risk-taking to envisioning resiliency and protective factors and to be thinking about how do we protect young people from harming themselves and others. We're trying to shift away from just purely categorical approaches to prevention and envisioning the interrelationship between health, education, social services, human justice, and many other factors. And clearly, we need to move away from just overemphasizing the health of the individual without recognizing the importance of the social context in which these young people are raised. So I show you these slides to say, to make the point that oftentimes our public policy is driven by trying to change the tip of this triangle in terms of trying to change observable behavior. So often we focus on health education around smoking prevention or alcohol prevention or teen pregnancy prevention. But many of our interventions, many of the policies that have been developed have not really taken into account the antecedent factors and shaping policies around the antecedent factors, whether they be at the family level, the school, peer, community, and policy. And to again be thinking about how do we promote protective factors and how do we decrease the risk factors. So the application on this triangle is to be thinking about in the area of teen pregnancy. I think one of the reasons why this is one of the areas where we've had some major policy success is that we've not only focused on giving teenagers education. Clearly, there's a lot of controversy still around abstinence only versus comprehensive family life. But we've actually understood the importance of parental presence and connectivity. We've recognized the importance of working on academic success and connectedness to schools. We've been focusing a lot on building new policies around increasing access to reproductive health services, as well as access to important role models in the lives of young people. And then in terms of policy, really focusing on increasing and assuring confidentiality of care. We have a long ways to go, but the point here is that unless you work at all of those levels, you're not going to make a lot of policy progress. And this visual of the iceberg, I hope if there's one thing that you take from my talk, is this iceberg. And as you reflect upon your own work, I don't expect that each of you can work at all these levels simultaneously, but think about creating the coalitions or strengthening the coalitions that you're involved in so that each aspect of this iceberg can be dealt with. I want to very briefly touch on the National Initiative to Improve Adolescent Health that is focused to working on the 21 critical health objectives. This is a partnership between HRSA and the Maternal and Child Health Bureau with the Office of Adolescent Health, as well as CDC, the Division of Adolescent and School Health, as well as about 35 national organizations. Our focus is very much on increasing the quality and years of life, as well as eliminating health disparities. And we've written a companion document to help communities work on implementing the 21 critical objectives. And at the end of my talk, you'll see this website for the National Adolescent Health Information Center where you can find this. I think it's clear that there's also very valuable companion documents in the area of college campuses, reproductive health, as well as rural health. And the national objectives were identified by a panel of experts to really take the subsection of 467 objectives to really think about where do you make a big difference in terms of critical health outcomes for youth. And these objectives fall into six general areas: mortality, unintentional injury, violence, mental health and substance abuse, reproductive health, and chronic disease prevention. And if we can make inroads in that policy direction, then I think we've made really important inroads in terms of the health of adolescents in this country. And woven throughout this effort is this recognition of the racial disparities, as well as increasing adolescents' access to high-quality health care. We recognize the work of the Forum for Youth Investment, which has really made important messages around the fact that we need to recognize what is going to be necessary for the successful transition of young adolescents into adulthood. And apart from a health status, we need to be thinking about self-sufficiency and a variety of angles, healthy habits and healthy relationships, as well as civic engagement. And you'll be hearing a lot more about these themes in the other speakers. So how are we going to get there? Clearly, we need to recognize the importance of all of these societal influencers on the health of adolescents and bring all these groups together to make a dent. And I want to just make one example here around the area of unintentional injury with the issue of deaths from motor vehicle crashes. As many of you know, this, even though we have seen some very dramatic decreases over the past two decades, from 41 per 100,000 in 1981 to 26 per 100,000 in 2004, we still see significant problems with the death and disabilities of young people on our roads. And while we've done better in terms of seatbelt laws, we see still that there are many adolescents and young adults who engage in risk-taking behaviors, including speed as well as use of alcohol. But I've been very struck by the fact that when we shape policy, it's not just what happens in your state capital or what happens in Washington, D.C. or at the local level, but I've been struck by this new campaign that Allstate has been involved in. So this is an example of how the business sector can intersect with the public health sector in terms of health policy. And this is one of their ads, and I initially saw this ad, by the way, in the Wall Street Journal. So I was very struck by the fact that this insurance company reaching out to the business sector, and this says, if 12 fully loaded jumbo jets crashed every year, something would be done about it. And that's the equivalent of nearly 6,000 teens dying in car crashes. By the way, this is a beautiful example of what I like to call a social math, that is the translation of data into something that's very useful. I just want to show you one more ad. I don't have a slide for it. It's, again, a full-page ad. And the slogan is, teenagers have been taught what not to do in the back seat of the car. But what about the driver's seat? And it shows a very cute kind of cartoon with three very distinct messages. Have the driving talk, just to say that you have had the drug talk, you've had the sex talk, all assumptions, by the way. But what about the driving talk with a free parent-teen driving contract at Allstate? And by the way, I don't have any insurance, I mean any stock in Allstate. I'm not pushing their product. A second message having to do with parents matter, that it's important for parents to be engaged. And third, a big push for graduated licenses. So that's what I wanted to say, that as an example of the iceberg, when we look at comprehensive single-issue approaches, here we see the role of the federal government in terms of not giving money to states for highway building unless there are laws about when alcohol is sold to young people, state and local efforts around graduated licenses, with North Carolina being the most stringent state and having greatest impact, with injury prevention plans, driver's education, the whole concept of having media helping with messages around friends not letting friends drink and drive, as well as the engagement of stakeholders, such as this health insurance or the insurance, auto insurance companies, the bartenders, parents, peers. So what it really, the message of this slide is, it takes a village to assure that young people navigate adolescent years into young adulthood. And we need to be thinking about concurrent policies looking at what's the role of parents and families, the role of policymakers, community-based organizations, youth and peers, as well as what goes on in the classroom. And also to be thinking about a developmental approach, everything from what do you do in the prenatal period through early childhood, middle childhood, teens, and young adults. So clearly messages and imprinting of youth seeing their parents driving with seatbelts, for example, or whether it's around responsible alcohol use or responsible other kinds of behaviors or having guns in houses. Those kinds of factors begin very early, obviously, in the life course consideration. So we need to be thinking about policy directions across the lifespan, to be thinking about demographically defined groups, legally defined groups, and the special needs of incarcerated foster care youth and migrant populations, youth with chronic conditions, and other populations such as homeless, pregnant, and parenting. And to be thinking about how do we really reduce behaviors that jeopardize health and safety and improve the health outcomes. But that's not enough. We really need to be thinking about healthy youth development because it's such an integral part of improving adolescent and young adult health. And to be thinking about how does policy help to shape healthy environments, not just focusing on merely changing individuals' behavior, to be thinking about the social and economic and contextual lives of young people. And finally, I want to make a plug for the fact that on the National Adolescent Health Information website, we have a document entitled Tracking Adolescent Health Policy. So if you're interested in any particular area around adolescent health, you may want to look at the source to see how to track what goes on in terms of policy environments. And thank you so much, and good luck.